Today on Talk About That, John gets hauled into a parent-teacher meeting over saggy pants. Meanwhile, I pick the absolute wrong person to sing to at a show and start a hip-hop group in Bolivia. Also, a conversation about altered memories and the tendency to make ourselves the hero of our own stories. Today's episode is not sponsored by Frontier Airlines. Flights start at $39. Seatbelts cost extra.
Hi, everyone. If you've been injured in an accident that was not your fault, listen up. We have legal professionals standing by to answer your questions for free. Call now and find out if you have a case and how much it's potentially worth. Call 800-497-4410. I'm here with spokesman John Wolf. So, John, tell everyone listening who should call right now.
Well, Maria, first off, thank you for having me here. It's always nice to answer the listeners' questions. Now, as far as who should call in, anyone who's been injured in an accident and think you deserve compensation, give us a call right now. 800-497-4410. You'll find out if you have a case and how much it's potentially worth.
Thanks, John. You heard it, folks. Take advantage of this opportunity and call now. 800-497-4410.
Advertisement sponsored by Legal Help Center may not be available in all states.
Let's go.
It's another Monday. That means it's time for Talk About That. I'm your host, Johnny. Here, as always, with my co-host, John.
Hey, that was good, man.
You like that?
That was a good intro. Yeah.
I don't know.
You're a natural.
We take it again. No. It
doesn't matter. I want to know, I wonder if the audience feels that your enthusiasm.
No. They don't feel.
You don't think they.
I think I'm kind of like I'm the guy who sits back and waits for you to say something dumb and I can comment on it. So I don't want to put myself out there. So
you get a lot of opportunities. There's a lot of dumb things that I say.
No, I just, yeah. So when I'm like, when you start, I'm like, I don't want to.
I noticed, by the way, that I'm wearing the same shirt this week as last week.
I think about that sometimes, too, that I have, like, I've got a rotation, and I'm like, what if it happens to fall on the same day? And it's like, these guys just sit in a room and film. Does Johnny have another shirt?
Well, at first I was worried, because you were wearing a black shirt last week, and it had a white sort of graphic like that, but it's different.
Yeah.
But when these clips come out, they're going to look very similar to last week. So.
No, nobody cares, John.
No.
They care about the quality content.
Yeah.
And the words that are coming out of our mouths.
Well, there's a lot of people that watch the clips. Like, if you see the
reels. Have been.
Yeah, there's, you know, usually the one this one that was put out this morning had 2,700 views immediately. You know what I'm saying? There's
thousands.
And guys, we're winning.
It's fine. It's okay. It's thanks for watching. And thanks for, you got to share those if they're not.
It would be very helpful.
By the way, if you wanted to listen to all of the archived episodes, go to talkaboutthatpodcast.com. Mm. We usually wait till the end, but then people have already fast-forwarded and they're done.
Right.
So I snuck in an ad for the show that you're already listening to. But I just am telling people, like, if this is your first listen, you can listen to all the episodes for free.
So, you know,
where you get your podcasts.
A lot of you are doing it. You're going back to the archives because our downloads were pretty high with one less episode.
I wonder what our most listened to episode. Have you ever looked for that?
I have.
What is it? I'm afraid.
I don't recall, but I have the data.
It's not like controversial or anything? Because sometimes we handle something.
I don't think so.
Okay.
I don't think so.
It's probably the silliest one. We get silly sometimes.
Occasionally.
At what age is it okay not to be silly anymore? I think about that as a comedian. Because it's like, I think there's the old thing about, I went to my mom and I told her I want to be a comedian when I grow up. And she said, sweetie, you can't have it both ways. So it's like sometimes you do a job to keep from growing up.
Yeah.
Which is, a lot of people would say that I'm deflecting. I don't want to get old. But I just wonder, like, is there a limit to when you can be silly? Like, obviously, when you have kids, it gives you that opportunity to be silly. It's an excuse to play with toys again.
Yeah.
I see grown-ups doing that. Yeah, I got my son some Legos. It's like, you played with Legos for 6 hours, and that was being a father for the day. But you wanted to play with Legos. And that's cool. That's so awesome. But I think you get to a certain age where people just go, be serious. Like, you're told by society, be serious.
I don't know if you're told by society. I feel like life calls for it.
Yeah.
Like you're trying to make, when you're trying to advance like your family's security, stability, your planning. For me, it's all about the planning. It's, you know, and just the running around to make it all work. Yeah. It is hard. It's hard to be silly. I told you whenever I was kind of interim youth pastor there while we were doing our search before we hired Jake and Abby, I was doing the Wednesday nights and it came back to me.
Yeah.
Like the PJ.
You got back in the...
Yeah. Like, because they used to call me PJ, Pastor John. And like I sat down and it was so familiar for so many years having done it that I was
like, hey, gang.
Hey, what's up, guys?
Let's rap about this.
Turn my hat around backwards. I don't know. It was very like.
I want to get down on your level. Can I for just a second?
I don't even feel like.
Do you feel like they responded?
I do.
Was it just that?
I do.
You got a connection. Your ability to connect.
I knew enough not to like.
Yeah.
Try to act like it's 2005 right. anymore.
That's a key, I think, for kids is, and I don't consider myself somebody who has a huge connection with kids. Like I did a couple of youth events this past weekend, and I was even telling you that like I'm not there yet, but I think I'm getting to the point where I'm like. I can see generationally it's going to start to be a problem eventually.
Yeah.
The connection. Like, you can see I can see the edge of the hill where I'm an old person to them.
I think that you can never discount the impact of just engagement and kindness.
But that's what I was going to say is like, not pretending to be a cool guy.
Oh, that would have been,
really important. To just be yourself. Like, I've done some rooms before where it's a 90% black audience.
Yeah.
And you see, like, two or three white comics on the show and then, like, five or six black comics on the show. And the white comics that go out there and try to be like, hey, they doing what they think a black audience wants to see.
Right.
They never connect.
Yeah.
And meanwhile, like, my buddy Brian Bates has clips of him doing, like, black rooms and he'll go out and just be the nerd, like he's just a nerdy guy,
yeah.
A hapless white guy, and they eat it up. It's like a safe window into white culture, and that's what you kind of are looking for in comedy when you're seeing like other races or other cultures. It's like, I want a safe window into your culture, and sometimes you want them to prove to you that you are what they think you are. Sometimes they want to see like, oh, I had no idea. You want to illuminate some other things they might not be looking at, or how we're the same and how we are different. But and all that said, it's just interesting to see. I've been able to win over audiences of other cultures sometimes because I can sing.
Right.
Like if I go to a black church and I whip out the guitar and then I hit like a high note, it's like it's over.
It spans the culture.
Yeah. Sometimes though, it's important not to try to be cooler than you are. And I think that's true of youth too. Like if you go in and be like, hey gang.
Well,
hey, fellow kids.
And to be clear, when
it's like the Steve Buscemi meme where he's got the skateboard and the hat. Right. How do you do, fellow kids?
To be clear, when I said that it worked.
Yeah.
It's not like.
You've accepted the position. Well, you are now.
I'm saying that my expectations.
Yeah.
Like the fact that it didn't crash and burn.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It was just a few kids in a circle, which
you
is
got
way harder.
It. You got
like,
through it.
Yeah, it was like, I think that they had a decent time. You know, I think I navigated the distractions that come in a small group circle.
But you're right. Care and kindness, like, it's the thing.
Just people being seen and heard.
Yeah.
And I don't mean that in a manipulative way. I mean, like, legitimately. I remember there's always kids over the years that the room is ignoring, and I see them.
Mm-hmm.
Which I'm not the most observant guy. I'm really not. But maybe that's the shepherding side.
Yeah.
I don't want anyone to be to feel as if they're not seen. And I remember doing classes. There were larger classes where I'd come in, you know, when someone else was the youth pastor or whatever, and I needed to sit in for a few weeks when they're on vacation or something. And there'd be that kid that you could tell the other kids had been conditioned not to listen to for whatever reason,
mm-hmm.
you know. And you know,
and you'd let that kid preach. You're like, hey.
Like, hey.
I need you to fill in.
I'm going to give you this apocryphal book, and I want you. But no, I think just like getting everybody – you don't tell everyone, hey, stop and listen. Like, the worst thing you can do.
Yeah, right.
Now you're making that kid have a worse time of it.
Uh-huh.
But what you can do is if that kid starts talking, you lock eyes.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't matter if the whole group's talking around you because they're still taking their cues from you. You lock eyes and you listen all the way through. And if the other kid starts talking to you to the side, you don't even acknowledge that they're talking. Like, I'm going to give the respect of this completely. And then, you know, obviously respond. And it would cause all the other kids to, what is he looking at? And they would turn and start listening then, and then have some sort of response. I mean, yeah.
Well, you were a substitute teacher for a while, too. You were an actual teacher, but I'm saying you subbed for a long time, too.
Ooh, that's a hard job.
And that's a different thing. Because, you're walking into an established culture.
Right.
And you don't know the rules of it yet.
Dude, when I had my classroom down for a year, by the time I was a second-year teacher, all my lesson plans were done.
Right.
All the kids coming up already knew kind of in the school, because I was in eighth grade history usually. So the seventh graders already knew, they'd seen me, and they knew, they had friends in eighth, they kind of knew okay, this is what you expect. There's everyone has their place. But yes, a substitute, oh my gosh. And you walk in and they're trying to kill you. Like they want to take you down and create chaos.
It's a chance for you to kind of establish dominance or be like, yeah, you can make yourself a folk hero that day if you razz the sub.
Yeah.
If you're that person, if you're that kind of person, you're like, this is where I make my mark today, gentlemen.
Yeah.
I remember the story that I always remember when I was in school. And I wasn't there when it happened, so it's one of those stories you never know if it's an urban legend. But I was out sick a lot when I was in school. I had really bad asthma, and I was really depressed a lot as a kid, so I missed a lot of school. I missed probably 30 days a year of class. But I was out one day, and they said, we had a sub, you missed it. And the sub was blind. And so they decided they would, when they found it out, this is Mrs. Wilson, and she blah, blah, blah. And they introduced her. Now, Mrs. Wilson is blind, and she comes highly recommended, blah, blah, and they entertain her, the kids, and one kid gets the idea, like, I know what we're going to do.
No way.
We're going to turn the lights out on this lady. We're going to have class in the dark. And so they did. And so they start having class, and then she opens a little whatever. She's got like a lesson plan in Braille or whatever, I guess. And then she goes, do y'all want to turn the lights on before we get started? She heard the buzzing stop.
Wow.
So she was listening for the ballast.
I was going to say, if she's a blind substitute teacher, she
heard a kid whisper, turn the lights on. Right. Yeah.
But there's no way she's not a pro, like ready to go.
Yeah.
Like, you don't make it to that.
And again, I have no idea. That's just one of those stories where you're like, and she shut us all down or whatever. Oh, it's like a crazy, she's a ninja. She had her extra sensory, you know.
Yeah, you got to think, if you're willing.
Somebody throws something, she catches it or whatever.
If you're willing to go in, man, to that situation, you got to know what you're, surely you're going to, like I remember Laura and I were engaged. I was a senior. I may have still been a junior. I needed some extra money. Because, you know.
Right.
Trying to
engaged senior.
I'm still a student. I'm working for my dad in the summer, some. Going home on the weekend, some, to mow with dad's company. And then I was doing summer camps, which don't, Johnny, they don't pay a lot. But I was preparing for youth ministry.
People take advantage. Christians take advantage of other Christians in untold ways.
Well,
hey, you're trying to cut your teeth in ministry? Come out and do our camp for $12 and some pizza.
Oh, man.
You know,
you and I did some camps for,
and we've done it too. I mean, there's times you've had, we've, you know, when you were doing ministry, you're like, hey, you're good at guitar, come on over or whatever. We've exploited.
Well, just because you have, that's not exploitation. Just,
well,
because you have a gift doesn't mean you deserve to be paid for it.
No, it's true. I guess you're right. That's probably,
especially if you're in your own church.
Yeah, you're
God,
right.
God, see, you've changed.
You should teach people to serve. You're right.
He calls it being exploited.
I think there's a line. There's a line, though, when you know, like, if it's a camp from out of state that's not your people, and you're like, come on, I heard you. You know.
Listen, I've led worship in this church for 18 years, and it is not my job.
No.
In fact, when he hired me,
he said, whatever you do, don't sing.
He should have said that. When he hired me, he said, hey, listen, I just want you to always be able to be focused on youth, and you don't have to worry. I know you've always done both, but we don't want to overload you here, so don't worry about it. Like 2 months in.
Overloaded you.
Well, I had this feeling. I'm just going to say it like that. I had this feeling I'm about to be asked to do this. And sure enough, he asked. And 18 years later, I'm still on the team as one of the leaders. And you know how much. So to your point, like,
you've led and then preached the same.
Oh, many times.
Yeah.
In fact, I used to
put
try
down
to
the
avoid
guitar,
that.
Pick up the other. Just put on the other hat.
I don't have to do that anymore now.
I'm going to put on my preacher hat now.
I'm going to
get down on your level.
I'm going to, you know, can we stop for a second and can we exegete?
Anyway. Can we turn on these lights first? It'd be a great thing to do is go in and pretend to be the blind teacher just to establish dominance.
Nice.
You know, you've got you put the dark glasses on.
And then act like you're looking forward and the kids are over there doing something. You're like, hey, but you really can see them and they don't know.
It'd be amazing. Oh, they'd be like, she's unbelievable.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's a great idea.
Uh-huh.
Heck, bring a cane.
Uh-huh.
You know what I'm saying? And then, like,
just whack somebody with it if they get out of line. How did she know?
I was saying, you get so angry that you suddenly just run towards them or whatever. And they're like, wow. Like, if we mess with this person, it doesn't matter what their limitations.
Man. Well, I mean, we're not encouraging people to pretend to be disabled.
No, I thought I had to edit all this
to
out.
To establish dominance over teen. I just feel like, as someone who felt helpless as a teenager and still feels helpless around teenagers as an adult.
Yeah.
I'm looking for an edge here. And if I got to fake a weakness so that I can get in and then be like, no, you thought you had me, I'll do it. I don't care what
it
is.
You know what my technique was?
What's that?
So number one, you can establish dominance with fun.
Yeah.
Or by, now it's hard, again, at my age now.
Well, being funny is always a secret weapon.
But they have to get it.
Yeah.
And you also, at this day and age especially, it would be hard for me, I have to be careful around kids, not to, as I'm trying to be funny, to elevate myself right. and then to make them look
right.
stupid.
Right, you can't roast them because you never know if it's a sensitive kid.
Because I would
kid.
Do that when I was,
yeah.
In the 1999 and 2000, I'll be in a classroom and some kid challenged me.
Uh-huh.
I mean, it wasn't like I was mean necessarily, but if you came at me.
Well, and the standard of mean changes. What's not mean to you could just be, you know, I can't yeah. believe you eviscerated my child.
Yeah, and it wasn't like I yelled at him, and it wasn't like I got the whole class to laugh at him.
Right.
But I let them know, hey, listen, if you're going
yeah.
to try to say something disrespectful.
Don't start, won't be none.
I don't know. I'm really dancing around. I do remember yeah. I had a meeting one time.
Uh-huh.
Oh, I'm getting deep now.
Oh, go.
So, I mean, I was teacher of the year, Johnny.
Okay.
Okay, so things went pretty well most of the time. All right.
Hang on. Do you have the plaque still?
I don't think I got one.
What?
Isn't that weird? And so I remember when I got pretty comfortable in the classroom, and I was youth pastoring too, so yeah. I had that smart aleck side, you know.
Uh-huh.
And I would tell stories like, you know, what I would do back then, you remember this? I would open every class because my dad used to do this. It's a public school. I would take like a Living Bible or New Living Translation and just pick a proverb that didn't mention God or anything. It was uh-huh. just literally an ancient proverb, just an ancient yeah. principle. And I would do a little just life skill lesson out of it. You know, read something. It didn't have to just be the Bible. I would do a little,
right.
hey, because school should be about more than just education. Like, hey, this is what it's like to, you know, be responsible. This is what it's like to, right. you know, be a good friend, those kinds of things. And I would say, because I was a history teacher, I'd be like, hey, and those are your words of wisdom today. Words of wisdom, W-O-W.
Now let's get into this math.
And I'd say, and then you guys say, and they'll go, wow, for words of wisdom.
Oh, words of wisdom.
So like I had these cues. And uh-huh. if I didn't do the wow, they'd be so upset like right. every day. Because mainly I wasn't teaching.
right.
So they didn't have to learn anything except. Yeah. But they
just had to be ready to say wow when you were done.
Right. But they would usually, you could tell.
Uh-huh.
You could tell if they were.
No, they were, yeah.
There's some kids who were not, but you could tell the kids.
But it's like it's a cultural thing. Yeah, it's like it's groupthink. You're teaching them to be together on something,
yeah.
and you're teaching them to, yeah. That's
and
fine.
Life skills, what we called them back then, was a big thing
yeah.
in education. Like you had to do all kinds of continuing education about, you know, you wanted kids to learn, you know, things beyond just the classroom,
right.
you know, curriculum. And so I kind of had that rapport with them a little bit, but I remember there was a kid. Gosh, I'm just gonna tell it all.
Gosh,
no, I can't. I don't think I can.
You can tell? You can't tell it?
We were in the foothills of the Smoky Mountains.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm ashamed. Guys, I'm telling you this, and I'm ashamed of it.
Oh, wow. That. Okay. Do I know this story?
Yeah, probably.
Okay.
And there was this kid, and he was always, like, defiant and getting in trouble in every class yeah. kind of thing. And he'd try to push the boundaries. And several of the kids, but he was this kid, I gotta be careful. I'll just edit if I have to. So he sagged his pants,
yeah.
which was against dress code.
Right.
And you're supposed to enforce dress code. And so this is, again, probably not the best approach. And he was like always kind of up, you know, pushing the boundaries.
You gave this kid the wedgie of his life.
So I just, I remember I gave a talk one day
yeah.
and it was that I didn't call him out. I was yeah. just like, guys, I don't know if you guys know,
uh-huh.
but you live in Blount County, Tennessee,
right.
at the foothills of the Smokies. Right smack dab in the middle, basically, or at
right.
least the edge of Appalachia.
You're not in a gang.
And so some of y'all are like walking around
right.
like that you're trying to access gang culture,
mm-hmm.
you know? And I don't get it because I don't know if you know where we live, but none of that exists here.
Yeah.
You know, but I think I was probably a little more smart alecky than that, you know?
Yeah.
The kids kind of, you know, giggled and laughed and stuff, you know? And something, so I get this parent.
Yeah.
Sets up a parent-teacher meeting with all the teachers
oh, no.
and the principal.
Right.
And now, what was going? I was terrified because she let me know. Like, I want to know what exactly you meant by gang culture. So, like, she had
oh,
this.
She
was coming after
yeah.
me. I was like, oh man. And so I was terrified.
Right.
And went into that meeting, and I was like praying about it.
Did you come in with saggy pants just to show?
I was like, guess
solidarity.
Right. Well, the good news was she opened the meeting at this table of teachers, and now he'd been in trouble in everybody else's class
okay.
too, so that played into my
right.
to my advantage. And she was like, "We're going to get to this," and then she pointed at me
oh,
and
no.
said, "And we're saving you for last."
Oh,
I was
whoa.
Like, "Oh man!" The principal's in there. I was like, "Oh dear, here it comes."
No.
So she starts going through And at every turn, whatever her kid had told her the teachers had done, when the teacher told the real story, the parent was like, she'd look at him like, you did what? Like, it was
a real, you know.
So by the time she
She'd been getting the good version from the kid.
But I still thought, I'm not going to be able to get out of this because I was kind of smart alecky to the kid, you know. This is, in, you know. And Johnny, I'm not going to say that the Lord did this for me.
Okay.
I'm just going to say it happened, and I had prayed about it.
Yeah.
Because I thought, I'm not going to be a smart alecky moving forward. I'm going to learn my lesson on this.
Yeah.
And they got to the teacher before me, and the secretary came in and said, you know, called the principal and said, hey, you got to come out of here. And the principal got up and left.
Yeah.
And so when the lady turned to me and started asking the questions, I explained myself, but the principal was nowhere around. The person who could get me in trouble for it was not there to even witness it.
Huh.
And it all just kind of diffused and went away, you know.
Wow.
And I was like, I literally mean, like.
Do we know why he got called out of the room?
It was a she.
Oh, wow. Do we know a she? Oh,
wow.
Of course, I've assumed
course
that the principal is a man.
Jeez. No, I had no idea. I had no idea. But.
You had Laura call. You had Laura calling a bomb threat so that he could go she could go investigate that and be like.
I just remember thinking, whoa, I'm going to be a little, you know.
Do you think it would have gone differently if the principal had been in there?
No, I think at that point the kid had already been discredited so much.
Right.
But I was going to own whatever I made. If I made a mistake, I'd own it. I was like, well, we do have a dress code, for, you know, and we do discourage.
Yeah.
You know, I think it was valid, but I had probably gone a little too far.
It is interesting, though, like, no, you're right, though, knowing what a kid's limits are for, like, you challenging them with something or just, like, your tone. Because, yeah, you got to deal with the parent. Like, that's the hard thing is parents. We're growing up in an ever more sensitive parent culture.
Oh, if somebody said that to my kid, I'd be down there in a heartbeat.
Right.
Yeah.
If somebody said to Sadie, pull your pants up.
No, if they reinforced dress code, that'd be fine.
Yeah.
If they tried to ascribe something to it. Now, I don't know what the sagging pants, what the real, I was making assumptions about the school system's reasoning behind the policy. Okay.
Yeah.
That was my mistake. Okay.
Yeah.
So like if they were in enforced dress code with her, and then make some assumption or insinuation about her character or about her actions. Yeah, I mean, that was...
Right,
with
a girl, it'd be more likely to be like, you're wearing shorts that are too short, or I don't want to see your belly, or I don't want to whatever. And you're gonna basically like slut shame
them
or something.
If you body shame her,
yeah,
I'm down there. And so, hey, if that kid's listening, I'm sorry I don't remember your name, but I'm real sorry. I was just a kid myself, Johnny. And
it's too late.
No,
that kid's...
Yeah.
That was the beginning point of them going completely off the rails.
Well, and that's when I probably really learned.
You know that person today as nobody needs to be like a Lil Wayne. Maybe you've heard of him.
Maybe you've heard of him.
Would it be great if it went on to be like a famous rapper and he really is?
Oh, man. I'd eat those words.
That'd be amazing.
And now, guys.
You're like in the liner notes of his CD.
And what's crazy is, I don't know if I'm going to keep this story or not. I could care less about sagging pants. Like, I didn't really care then. I was just trying to enforce the culture. And the kid was mean all the time.
Uh-huh.
He was coming at everybody.
Right.
So I just wanted to put him in his place, back to the original. I wanted to take control of the classroom.
Well, with me, when I used to do comedy shows for a lot of youth, I used to do a lot more youth shows. And I did a couple at schools, Christian schools. They'd say, hey, we want you to do our chapel. We're going to bring you in. The kids will love it. We've had it before, you know, a couple of times we've had communions before. They'll love you. So I go in. And back then, I'm basically a substitute teacher because I'm walking into a culture I don't know anything about.
Right.
I'm trying to win over an audience that I don't really know. I just know, like, oh, here's some generalities I think will work here. But I would do specific things back then. Like, I would do songs. And there was one parody song I would do. And it was my big closer. And I would go out into the audience on verse 2. And find somebody. And it was usually an adult.
Yeah, I remember. Yeah.
And I would sing a verse to them. And I'd be like, look at me when I'm singing to you. And I would kind of embarrass them. But it was always like the pastor who would sit on the front row. Or it would be a school administrator.
Do you rub your finger through the pastor's hair and stuff
sometimes? I would tassel their hair. And I'd be just so just obnoxiously like in their face about it. Well, I did this school one day. And so there was no administrators or school. Like the teachers all stood in the back and was like, let's see how this goes. They were doing that thing. And so that's bad for two reasons. One is kids need to see teachers and administrators laughing at the edgier stuff because they know it's okay now to laugh at it.
Right.
And the other thing is, like, it just – there was nobody for me to pick on.
Yeah.
So I picked, like, what I thought was, like, a big football player kid.
Oh, no.
So I go over to him, and I do the verse and blah, blah, blah. And I was like, oh, and it was going well and whatever. And then at the end, like, I got – I got an email. One of the only emails I've ever gotten.
No.
I got an email saying, oh, we loved you and blah, blah, blah. Just so you know, though, the kid that you picked was like really like just destroyed because he got picked on the whole rest of the day. And it's a kid who's really shy. And I was like, I picked him because I thought he was like a Letterman jacket kid who was like the high school quarterback. No, that's not him. He was mortified that he got singled out. And I was just like, and I literally had to like send that kid like a Facebook message. Hey man, thanks for being such a good sport during the show. I tried to like not play it off like an apology, but I was like, hey man, it was great. And, you know, he, oh man, you know, all good.
I loved it.
But yeah, evidently it did not. So I just guessed wrong, but you know, I stopped doing that bit really. I mean, those are all reasons I stopped doing it, but it just kind of worked its way out of the act. But it was a – you never know. Usually if you pick the pastor, it's going to go great.
Oh, you're good.
One time I started doing the hair thing, and it was the pastor of this church, and he had the cool, like, spiky hair. Uh-huh. It was back in the frosted tips. This was, you know, early 2000s. And he – I got a laugh so big that I thought, this is not this funny. I literally checked my fly. The laugh was so big, I thought, they're laughing at me.
Yeah.
It was one of those laughs where it's like, okay.
Right.
I'm the joke now.
But there's something about the hair he didn't know, probably.
This guy evidently was like obsessed with his hair.
Nice.
And it made its way into his sermons about, I'm having a good hair day. And so when I went out there and started messing with his hair, the crowd just knew that Pastor so-and-so was obsessed with his hair. And so I don't think I've ever gotten a laugh that big.
Wow.
So I was like, something's wrong. Something's getting ready to happen. This is not normal.
I checked my fly.
I did. I went, okay, what are we laughing at here? Yeah. This does not get this kind of laugh.
Maybe the Lord knew I couldn't handle the hair. You know what I'm saying? Maybe that was going to be...
Well, if it's a bald person, I would go... I would cut up. I would record scratch their head.
You know what's weird, though? These stories, though, have triggered this. So, like, I've made the comment before that I think sometimes being a youth pastor and a teacher as well were probably the only jobs I was ever really good at. Like, I really felt like myself in those
better
seasons.
Than weed eating, John?
Well, I'm actually pretty good at weed eating, too.
John, I think you're good at a lot of things.
No, I'm just saying, though, that's the job that felt like, it felt...
Like all of your skill sets engaged.
And it felt like it worked, and it was important, and it helped people.
Right. Not that weed eating doesn't help people, it's not important.
But it's fun, you know, there's a lot of drama in it.
Yeah.
It's not that. But kids are... I think that's what I miss about teens versus doing adult ministry.
Yeah.
Like, I would create experiences because they want to go do it.
Yeah.
So you got to think, Johnny. Think about it. I was looking at pictures, by the way, because it was your birthday yesterday.
Yes.
Happy birthday to Johnny.
Hooray, guys.
If you guys follow me, I posted a bunch of pictures of me and Johnny all over the world, all kinds of different things we've done. And as a bunch, I didn't post.
Yeah.
Because obviously, you're limited. But there were a lot of like student leadership retreats. We used to call them overdrive retreats, where we're both in some T-shirt that I made up, you know, that Jeffrey designed, and that we, you know, Johnny, we had dozens.
There was a sideways hat in a lot of those that I was wearing. Like, I think I took on a rap persona.
We did a rap
in
thing.
Several
of those. Was in Bolivia.
Yeah.
By the way,
we were we did a rap with like a little music break in between, like a little hey now, and I was what were we? It was for the Bolivian Hope Center.
Yeah.
And so I called this Run BHC. Do you remember this? I was Run BHC and you were Save Your Safe.
That's right, Save Your Safe.
But we made these little like tin foil on a paper plate. Because we didn't have any. All we had was what was in the house
in
of the missionary.
In a foreign country on the last night.
Like, so I made like a little huge Flavor Flav clock out of tin foil and a plate.
And if you look, by the way, there's a picture of me and you standing on bricks that were being laid at the Hope Center.
Yeah.
Writing the song.
Right, writing a song for that
I can't
night.
Tell you how many times that we did this in Miami. Remember his house in Miami, the kids center there, the children's home. We wrote a song there too. What was that one?
It was a rap one too.
Yeah.
So it had rap in it.
Almost everywhere we went, we wrote a song.
So forget what I said about trying not to just embrace urban culture just to be cool. Well, we were being ironic. Obviously, we were being like, hey, here's two lame white guys trying to rap.
But. Right. Yeah, that's the biggest part of the joke, yeah. God, I remember some lines from that Bolivian song.
Uh-huh. It was a tongue twister in parts.
So we had the pastor there, and there was named Freddie.
Right.
And he was a dangerous driver.
Well, it's not just that. You have to be a dangerous driver because everyone's aggressive in Bolivia.
It's all like roundabouts and no rules.
It's a lot of near misses.
Yeah.
And thank God we didn't get killed.
Right, because we're
every
all
day when you're just going to the work site, you almost die five
times.
Because
you got seven people in the back of a truck.
Yeah,
like, and you're just
being sloshed hither and thither.
Yeah, I mean, but all of you parents who sent your kids with us, it was
totally safe.
It was fine. But I remember it was like we ride with Freddie.
He drives like
Mario Andretti. Are you ready? You'll be throwing up spaghetti.
You'll be nauseous. Man, we urge you to be cautious. And it's the rainy season, so you better bring galoshes.
Yeah. To the Andes.
Yeah, I don't remember the report.
Ain't no room for pansies?
Maybe. It got a little...
Watch your something, alpaca gonna stampede.
Yeah.
I can't... Anyway. And they did, Johnny.
They did. The alpacas.
Alpaca are everywhere.
I did a sermon about... I did one of the devotions that day and I at the Bolivian Hope, at the thing, the daily, and I talked about alpacas, about how like... They look so dorky.
Yeah.
And then we were on the mountain. We were going up. Uh-huh. Remember when we climbed the Andes and the alpacas are just like, they're looking at you. Just, they look so ridiculous. Yeah. And then they just like, when the truck came by, they just took off running and they ran straight up a hillside.
Yeah.
And they were like literally like perpendicular to the hillside. And I was like, uh-huh. Oh. And it was like, I think the message was something about like God's gifted you with whatever. Right. And so you may not fit in your current whatever. But then the thing he's prepared you for, you'll be. Yeah. You'll have the skills to, I don't know.
Yeah.
And they were like, wow. When I was done, they were like, wow, can we eat now? They were ready to, it was lunch
break. You
remember
our favorite meal? Well, there's two favorite meals in Bolivia.
I don't know. Well,
the night they would go, there was a Chinese restaurant in
town.
Yeah,
they had Chinese.
It was like heaven.
Chinese food in Bolivia was some of the best Chinese food I've ever had.
No, we were exhausted.
Yeah, that's true.
And we'd been working
all
day.
Maybe if I ate it just in my regular life.
It was so good. And then they'd take us to the steakhouse that last
night.
Right. And the steaks were huge, and you had, yeah.
Yeah.
But I was looking through all those pictures, man, and it was just like this, those previous stories, they there's a part of me that looks at it and goes, wow, that was, we were in our element. And I don't look back at like, I want to go do it again. It's not that at all. It was a great season I'm grateful for.
Yeah.
That's it. I mean, I love the season I'm in. It's different and all those things. It's not worse. I mean, dude, having a 13-year-old daughter is like a blast, and I love where I am. But then I look back, and I do over time. It's one of the reasons, by the way, that I wanted to start a podcast was there's a lot of things I wish I could do differently or say differently to those. I mean, guys, there's thousands of people over the course of that 15 years,
mm-hmm.
thousands that walked through, and
right back out. They were like, nope.
We're out of here.
And you I sang to a few of them and tousled their hair. That ran a few off.
But you know, I think there was probably a time where I don't know. You're. They say hindsight's 20/20. I don't think that's true for me. I think I remember myself differently than maybe things were. Sometimes I'll come to you like, dude, I can't believe I was like this, and you'll be like, you weren't like that at all.
No,
you know.
And there's a podcast I listen to called Smartless, and they had Bradley Cooper on, and Bradley Cooper was talking about that, about how he's been in therapy, and he said only like in the last year and a half has he started to like come around and have a real self-esteem that's not based in his accomplishments.
Uh-huh.
This is the guy who's won Academy Awards.
Yep.
And he's like, when you start thinking about your childhood and it's like the story we tell ourselves about ourselves is so important.
Yeah.
And you have to like extricate yourself from your own memories even. Because you can, he was talking about that. He goes, you have to understand what your childhood really was. Otherwise, you're living in this story of what you think your dad and mom did to you.
Right.
And then you could tell that story to an aunt and they go, that's not how that happened.
Yeah.
You almost set the house on fire that day, don't you remember? And they go, no, I've been thinking this whole time that I was this big like victim. And I'm not saying there's not real trauma. But I think there is this need, like when you take a memory out, like what science is saying about memory is it's not like this database.
Right.
Where you just pull out a Blade server and you go, oh, this is exactly what, and then I put it back. When you pull it out, you've altered it a little bit. You color it a little bit more, you put it back, and now it's locked in and you can keep, it's like by handling it, you're messing with it.
Yeah.
And so I think you have people who constantly live in this version of themselves. And until you kind of figure out what is the real narrative of my life, especially if you become a parent, you don't want to, you're so obsessed with not repeating the mistakes of your parents or whatever that sometimes you forget to give your parents a break.
Yeah.
You know, give your parents a break sometimes.
Well, you know, that old, I forget who said that quote, you know, people don't remember, the words you said. They remember the way you made
them feel. Maya Angelou said that. Yeah.
And that, I think that sometimes if I am counseling someone, and certainly in my own therapy, there's that sense of, what they're remembering is accurate to them because of the feeling.
Yeah.
Especially feelings of shame, mm-hmm. fear, and if someone was very angry.
Yeah.
You know, if it's, and, you know, I was a sensitive kid, and you were too. So there are things I remember that stick out to me probably because of how I was made more than what the adult in the room did.
Right.
You're right, guys, let's be clear. There's a lot of times adults are crossing major lines.
Yeah, and adults do blow it. It's just that thing of, like, I feel like we're in a time and culture now where people go – this is not true of every therapist, but sometimes people go to therapy to figure out who to blame for their lot in life, not to how to get better.
Yeah.
Like, I want to figure out how to process this trauma so that I don't pass this on. That's a healthy way to go to therapy. To go to therapy and be like, how do I, who do I blame for this? And how do I get the people in my life to figure out how to work the way around my issues rather than make my issues better? Like, I see some of that now in therapy culture. And I'm a little bit like turned off by that, like not willing to do the work, but just do the work of blaming, like blame shifting. There is real trauma. And that's the hard part, not knowing like which, what work are we really doing? And, I don't know.
Well, 12-step recovery, at least, and that kind of work, that's what's so, like, radical about it is about step 5 and 6 and 7. Once you've inventoried all the people, and one of the things you inventory is harms done to me.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of us, the work we do kind of stops there.
Yeah.
It's so key. We're not dismissing it. I'm not downplaying it. Like, I think it's super important. And there are some harms that are so traumatic that, I mean, they are life shifting.
Right. The person doesn't need necessarily, even if you forgive them, they don't need necessarily be in a trusted advisor anymore.
No.
Right.
I mean, that's understand.
That's
the difference.
Okay. It's totally okay to walk away.
And forgiveness and reconciliation are also key. You have to still learn to establish boundaries.
Yeah.
You don't, yes to all those things. But then another part of your inventory is harms done by me.
Right. That's a tough one, right?
They often cross. Uh-huh. The two things cross.
Right, because you could be in a fight where you're both in the wrong and you got to own your part of it while not owning their part.
You have to own that even if their part set this thing in motion, that your reaction is still your responsibility. Or as we say to kids in the old days, your response is your responsibility.
Yeah.
Like, that's not just to a lot of us. And I think especially when I look at kids, you know, there is a balance there to go, hey, I understand why you reacted. There were things I made amends for that the action that I'm making amends for on paper was right.
You want to retract your amends right now?
No.
You want to go ahead?
There were times that I've made
amends. I want to issue a statement.
Those of you who made amends, there were times I made amends and I get why I did it. If I told you what it was, anybody listening would go, well, that's a reasonable, even maybe right reaction.
Uh-huh.
You know, you had a strong. But what I was making amends for, and this is where the faith part comes into it. Hey, I know where I crossed into anger. See, the Bible says, be angry and sin not. Meaning, like, there's an anger that we all feel. It's a human emotion. And I don't think sin means, like, don't react. I think there's a sin of, like, I wished harm upon you in my heart.
This, you're saying this to me.
Johnny, I think you know why I called you here. But, like, I that took a twist, didn't it?
It did.
Like, that I wished, like, I think that's the right. I took vengeance in my heart instead of letting, and that's the real, like, offensive part of it all. This is the thing that affected me the most of all recovery was this. If I really believe the gospel, then every sin, all my sins, past, present, and future, have been forgiven, right?
Yeah.
So that's great news. That also means every sin committed against me by other believers, past, present, and future, have also already been forgiven.
Which we want to be less generous about.
Right.
Yeah.
So, like, if you hurt me in the past, you've already been forgiven for it. And if I hold it against you, then this is really just the gospel 101. So what Jesus said, I don't think it was like we make it into a rule. If you don't forgive, you won't be forgiven.
Yeah.
I think what he's saying is, like, you can't receive the kind of forgiveness I'm giving if you don't understand how it applies to everyone else.
You're kind of playing God because you're saying, like, God, I know you forgave them, but I know best.
Right.
I know to hold on to this grudge.
I know that the sin that I have committed was enough for you to be tortured with the worst torture of all of creation and hung on a cross, but you don't know what they did to me.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, so you have to then go grapple with the actual cross. You have to like grapple with what actually happened to him. Do you really believe that happened? Do you really believe that your harms committed, you know, justified his crucifixion? Like, or do you go, well, yeah, but I'm not that bad. So it starts kind of unraveling all those, oh, I'm not that bad. I'm not the murderer. I'm not the, and you go, oh, actually, no, I am. And so it was freeing and also offensive because you're like, but it doesn't mean, again, we let the abusers, or doesn't mean we let those who've hurt us off the hook. What we say is like, okay, that's now in God's hands to deal with the judgment of it. And it's so freeing. Now I can go, I make amends to you for my angry reaction. That doesn't mean that I don't think what you did was completely, you know, irreprehensible.
We're talking to me again.
Again, I'm looking at Johnny. It just means that I'm not demanding the justice anymore that your negative action towards me demands. I'm going to leave that in God's hands. And it's super offensive because God may not punish you in the way that I wish he would.
Right.
But I have been forgiven. So I don't know.
I do think like, it's where those steps overlap where you're like, I got to make amends and I got to forgive people, but I got to make amends too. Yeah. You're owning your own humanity and it's hard for people to do because you want to be the hero of your own story. It's very important.
Yep.
That narrative that you tell yourself about yourself, it defends all these, like I was talking with Elias Dummer who I had lunch with and he was fascinating and he studies all this stuff about sociology and the human mind and how we work. And he's read all these studies and he read one that said that what they're learning about human thought is we think of ourselves as kind of like the president of our actions and our thoughts. Like I'll decide to say this or do this and I'll rubber stamp this. Yes, do it. And he goes, what we're finding out, what we really are is more a press secretary. We're defending things that we already are doing. Like, have you ever gone, you know there's chocolate cake in the fridge. You know you don't need to eat that cake. You've already eaten that cake in your mind, though. You're already, and you've already decided to eat it.
Yep.
So what your press secretary mind goes, well, I'll work out in the morning. Or, it's my birthday. I'm having some cake. So, like, what we think of ourselves is, like, this overlord of our thoughts and our emotions and our mind. And what we really are is we're Sarah Huckabee Sanders going, I know what he said, but he didn't mean it.
Right.
We're defending it as though, like, we're playing defense all the time.
Yeah.
And in that, we're the harmed party or we're the innocent one. But really, it's like, we know what we're doing. We're spinning. Mm. You know? We're masters of spin.
Yep. We are, John Steinbeck, by the way, said, no one wants advice, only corroboration. Like, that's the idea. I am trying to get someone to help
you go
me
until
justify
they,
what
you
I've
go,
already.
We've all done it. We go to that friend and go, like, should I invest in this? And you wait until you hear the person go, do it.
Yeah, man.
If you already have decided you want to do it, or like, it's cool. Like, there was a thing that about running, and it's about, like, they're learning now that running is bad for the what they call the vascular age, your age of your heart. It's bad for men. They did this huge study about it. And I'm like, and I just skimmed it. I was like, I wonder what they consider like a runner, though. Like, if running 3 times a week, like I may do,
right,
a couple miles, 3 miles, that's not what they're saying. So I'm already like,
right,
without even having read the study, I'm already making this like, they don't mean me, though. Or if you decide, if somebody goes, well, you actually need to eat this many calories to be healthy, and this is like, you need to limit it. And I go, yeah, but I'm an outlier. You don't know. Like, I know sodas are bad for me, but I'm always in my mind going, yeah, but I mean, I've had no issues up to, like, I'm making a defense.
Yeah.
And I'll go to somebody, I'll find somebody healthy that drinks sodas, and I'll go, look at this guy.
Yeah.
So you wait until you find corroboration.
Yep. Yep.
And that's your, even if it's the one person in a million. You know,
see, and I think those of us who have an inner committee that's constantly critiquing all that we do.
Yeah.
I don't know. That goes back to, again, the
whole. Now you're making an outward committee until you get the right.
Right.
It's like you find the one juror that's going to hold on and hang the jury. You know, I don't know. Maybe he's innocent. You're like, well, actually, there's a mountain of evidence that he's not. I don't know, though. And you're like, that's my juror right there. Yeah, got him.
Well, I was on a call with some former pastors this morning that we meet every other Thursday morning. And we were talking about something in my life, and they know me now pretty well.
Yeah.
And I said, you know, I made this decision, did this thing, and I'm feeling a little, you know, I'm being vague on purpose. And one of them goes, you know, John, I think you should completely condemn yourself about that. Like, you just need to make yourself feel awful about it. And they all kind of laughed. I said, well, finally, someone has agreed with my inner committee. We just keep dismissing my inner committee as if they know nothing. But I think they sound pretty smart, you know. So there's just like this, I think you have both sides of it. I don't think I've ever, there were times that parts of me felt like the hero or wanted to be. If I really am honest, if I go back and sit in the chairs of those seasons, it was hard. And like kids are going on a trip next week. So I was talking to Jake about, hey, I can remember driving buses and vans and like the weight of the people behind me.
Yeah.
And anytime I did it overnight or anytime I did any kind of thing, there's always that weight of it. But then you get lost. If I could just get there, then you have this kind of feeling of relaxation. Okay, the kids are safe. Let's enjoy the trip now, you know. And then you're going to have the thing. Someone knocks on the door at 2 a.m. Someone's in trouble. Someone snuck out. Someone this. So, again, that goes back to my trick I didn't say in the beginning. I would, in the classroom and as a youth pastor, and it wasn't hard. I sometimes really meant it. But I knew in order to keep control, there's every once in a while I needed to just suddenly look like I was nuts.
Right. Freak anger. Out. Yeah. Go bad cop on.
Yeah. And just do it. And then immediately switch back to like, all right, guys, you know, and then and make them feel, is he okay? Like, can he just do that anytime? Yeah. He's like, yeah, I can't. So don't
make me snap.
Right. Yeah. Don't make me snap. And if you don't make me snap, I'll be the most fun teacher and youth pastor you ever had. But if you cross this boundary, I will push you back across it.
Yeah.
Not literally, guys. I didn't push any kids.
No, we're not talking literal. We're not talking about a literal weight behind him when he's driving the bus either. No, he wasn't driving kids to fat camp. This is a metaphysical, like a...
Wow. You held that when I said it. You've been holding it, just, and I set you right up with literal.
You did.
Wow, that worked. That's
kids, I feel your weight back there. I'm going to need y'all to switch places. I don't...
We're going around a big curve.
Could you guys all switch to one?
Yeah, that's funny. But I think that there's that, I look back at it and go, it was what it was, and it was great. But I want to say again, and this is not, I mean, this is part of the amends. If there are kids who ever hear this, like, I recognize that I might not agree with, like you said, the accuracy of the story.
Yeah.
But I now feel, I guess, empathy towards the feeling in your teenage years that you may have had.
Right.
Under whatever happened in my ministry. And so I would like to justify. I like to be like, well, we didn't do that. We loved kids a lot. And we did. And all those things. We tried to do it right. But just like a classroom.
Still made mistakes.
Just
and
like
it's
parents.
Okay. Yeah.
Like there are kids that are hurt out there or carry some wound that I'm a part of.
Right.
Though I tried with everything inside not to be. And I think it's just okay to go, hey, you know, listen, I apologize. And if you ever want to call and talk about it, I'm willing to listen.
We need a hotline number to go across here. If you've been damaged by John Driver.
You can email me at john@johndriver.com. That's fine.
Yeah.
And I'll listen.
You may be entitled to compensation.
Lord, I hope not. Because there's not a lot
of entitled to an apology. That's good enough.
But yeah, I mean, I think to say, now here's the thing. There are people in life that I know feel things about me.
Yeah.
And in my old days, I would have apologized every time to try to bring peace. And recovery also taught me that sometimes I was enabling a negative thing in them and actually hurting them worse.
Right.
So I'm pretty willing to go, let's really look at, if there's a harm I've caused, let's really, really look at it.
There's like a, didn't Martin Luther King talk about like there's a negative piece that's like just the status quo.
Right.
Instead of like a positive piece, which is justice.
Right. Dealing with it and going, hey, listen, you're not going to like this.
Right. But, it's like when they go to clean out a wound. It's like, this is going to hurt. This has already like been... It's infected, and I got to get in here and scrub it out, and this is going to be awful, but it will not heal properly unless I do this.
Well, when I became a boss, which is, by the way, I think that particular word, my least favorite part of adulthood, and I don't think I'm a bad boss per se, but there are times I have to make decisions, and I just want to apologize because it hurts people I care about. And then I also have to recognize This is the real world, though.
Right. Like, it's part of being the boss.
There are things I have to do in this situation to protect people in this situation. I have more than one person I have to think about.
Yeah.
More than one situation I have to think
about. I think you think that you're the boss of me, don't you?
Johnny, I'm not apologizing.
Are you getting ready to have a hard conversation
with me? I'm not apologizing for being your boss. And, Johnny, you're fired.
Let me just say, who started the podcast today? I think that's a little usurping going on. Usurp is a weird word.
Yeah. It sounds like usurping is what you're doing.
Yeah.
Hey, bro, how dare you usurp me?
How dare you try to use syrup up in here?
Yeah.
I mean, use syrup. That sounds like you're going to use syrup. You pour syrup on whoever you're trying to overthrow.
Hey.
It would work.
I would love to be usurped.
If you were trying to overthrow, like, a coup. A coup is another great word, which is like, you know,
right.
Sounds like birds are taking over the Capitol. But you go in there and you pour syrup on the whatever. Now he's sticky. He can't move.
Or he loves it.
That's
he's
true.
He's licking his arm and stuff.
He gets diabetes. Now he's easy to
it's
easy to conquer. It is a long play.
Yeah. You're going to.
Hey, thinking of taking over the country? Use syrup.
Use syrup. Throw a little butter on there.
Brought to you by. Yeah,
talk about that. We would also like to say that we do not endorse the overthrowing of the government
by use of any
condiments. No, anything.
Don't use syrup. Don't use.
Is syrup a condiment?
You know what? Just how about we follow the laws and we go through the normal channels,
and then we enact systemic change through the proper channels if possible.
How about that?
Have you ever thought about that, Johnny?
Think about that. That's the next. That's the thinking man's
podcast.
Version of this podcast.
Right.
We talk about that, but we're just, it's just verbal diarrhea. When you want to think about it, go to Think About That.
ThinkAboutThatPodcast.com.
I bet we really could start zero archived episodes.
What if we.
A spinoff.
What if we started a new podcast and we sunsetted? That's a nice way of people
like that.
We're going to sunset this podcast.
We usurp this one.
Right.
That's what we really do.
Hey guys, this has been so great. We're going to sunset it. We're going to retire it.
And then another. Other uglier podcast appears like a mythological creature. We've lopped the head off and another one just appears.
Oh, that got dark. I was thinking more like we just relaunch knowing all that we know now.
Think about that.
How would we do things differently if we're starting a podcast today? And the answer is I think we've learned
Do you think we have amends to make just from the 5 years that we've been doing this? We've
already got you and I talk about off the air all the time. I wonder.
I've never listened. I don't want to go back. Now, we have people who will listen to the first episodes and go, we love this. And I'll be like, oh, my gosh, I said that. Like, there's no way to.
Well, not everything can't age perfectly.
I can't even watch five-year-old stand-up clips.
Yeah.
Because my act is just different.
I can't watch old sermons.
My confidence is different.
If I watch old sermons, I'll go, that was a good point. Also, your entire approach is completely different from what you do today.
Yeah.
You know, like, it's a very. By the way, you were in church Sunday, weren't you?
I was.
Who preached for 32 minutes?
You did.
32.
Yeah.
I mean, guys, that's low for me, if y'all didn't know.
That is.
And maybe high for your pastor.
We made it out of there so fast.
I've been going pretty short, and I would like to be acknowledged for it. Because people are like, yeah, long-winded preacher. And then when
you
do it.
It was like 11:14 or something you were done.
I usually get us out by like 11:15 right now. And I don't know if it's even worth it. You know, if I'm not going to start getting credit for it, I'm just going to go back to my old ways. Listen, I can exegete a lot longer if you'd like. I did use a word. I used one term. The Christological hermeneutic.
You did say Christological hermeneutic. You said it more than once.
But I set it up. I said this.
You set it up by saying it's a 50-cent phrase.
It's the one thing I'm going to give you today for Father's Day. You can go home and show off at dinner.
There was a little snickering, though.
Yeah, it was Christological hermeneutic.
It came from me. I snickered.
You snickered.
ChristologicalHermeneutic.com. It sounds very fancy.
Well, I didn't make it up.
Right, no.
But it's reading scripture through the lens of not just like Jesus, but like all the things that pertain to Jesus. Like, it's how you don't
using that as your prism of thought rather than being like, okay, here's the God of the Old Testament, here's the God of the New Testament. Like, think Jesus is a through line through the whole story.
Ooh, here's a scripture where I can justify slavery. Ooh, here's a scripture where I can justify abusing women. Ooh, here.
Right.
Christological hermeneutic removes all of that because how did Jesus treat those situations? How did he treat people? How did he, you know, how did he respond to God? What was his attitude, his disposition? You know, if you know that Jesus is humble and gentle, as he said, come to me, for I am lowly and humble in heart. Anyway, gentle and lowly. You were like, I've already heard this once. I'm done with it.
I've been trying to work Christological hermeneutic into everyday phrases ever since then. It's not working.
Is it not?
No.
Well, you just did it.
Well, I did, but yeah, we're just referencing it. It's kind of like in the spelling bee when you say, use it in a sentence, and they go, spell the word. Yeah.
Right.
It doesn't work.
Yeah. Those are my favorite old bits of yours.
I need to bring it back. It's hard, though, because that's a bit where I need them to cue the sound effect.
Audio, yeah.
And if they get it wrong, the whole bit, I'm just out there.
There's got to be a tech
ledge.
Way now where you can fire it.
I can fire it, and it'll clicker.
Yeah. I don't know if a comedian has a clicker.
I am a substitute teacher, for real. I'm just hanging out there. Hey, guys, I got some slideshows for you.
Like a picture of you and your bikini comes up, and you're like, why?
I did use a picture of me. I did a homeschool. It was like a dinner.
Yeah.
These kids all go to like some play or something, then they come back and I did comedy. It was like a, they call it classical conversations. They go to a fancy restaurant.
Nice.
Then they normally go to like the opera. But all those things were like COVID regulations were intact. So they were like, no, we're not wearing masks. So they invited me to come. So they came back to the church and I did the thing. All that said, I was getting ready and I thought, you know, I was homeschooled my last 2 years and we had like a prom kind of a thing like this.
Yeah.
And I have a photo from that and it's me and my brother in suits.
Oh, I've seen it.
Rayon suits. And we have flowing mullets.
Like down to your, past your shoulders.
Glorious mullets.
Oh my
like
gosh.
Like half a bottle of conditioner a day to detangle this thing. And it was shiny. It's like a horse's mane. And, it's one of those photos, and I used it to kind of show, and I had them put it on the screen, because it's one of those photos I thought, I want to show them that, like, this is the kind of stuff you think you'll never get over when you're a kid, and now it's something that I think is so funny that I want to show it to other kids.
Yeah.
And so it's kind of like, I want to get a laugh from this, and also, here's a life lesson.
Yeah.
What you think is so important right now is not important, and the stuff that you think is unimportant is probably the biggest stuff, you know. But anyway, that's just one of those photos where I thought it was so embarrassing. When, you know, as I got older and then when I became a comedian, I was like, I got to find that old photo.
Yeah.
That just shows you're kind of like, I want to find that vulnerability, that point of like, how can I show them that if I take myself down a notch in front of them, this will ingratiate me to them maybe a little
and
bit.
And instead they bullied you.
They did. They were like, oh my gosh, this guy.
You, they didn't listen to
There used to be a comedian that had a bit about walking through. He had really bad acne as a kid.
Yeah.
And he was a writer for Saturday Night Live named Fred Wolf. And he said, I had this horrible acne as a kid and I had terrible like anxiety about it and self-esteem issues. And he goes, and one day I was walking through the mall and had my head down like I normally do. And I was just like really just trying to get through there. And I look up and I see a guy in a wheelchair and he's got no arms and no legs. And there's a guy pushing him. And I was like, here I am worried about a few pimples. This guy's got no arms and no legs. And I remember as I walked past him, he looked up to the guy who was pushing him and said, did you see that kid's face?
I kind of felt that coming.
You felt that coming.
That was good. Yeah. That's good. A little misdirection. And then really heartstrings. It really tugs.
Do you think?
Yeah. When you,
that's the kind of.
That's good. Just set them up and just clobber them.
But anyway, we need to post that mullet photo. I need to post it on our Twitter account or our Instagram.
You know what some of the.
It's a throwback Thursday.
You know what some of the kids are doing
one.
Now, right? The boys have mullets again.
I know.
And they're getting perms.
No, they're not.
They're getting perms, Johnny. The boys are getting perms. I'm not saying it's good or bad. I'm just saying. I feel
it's like cyclical. It really does come around.
That's going to be somebody's future.
There are a few things
photo.
That have never come back, though. I've noticed like parachute pants never really came back.
I think someone told me they saw someone in them the other day.
Really?
Yeah.
Because I've seen like nylon warm-up pants, but these were parachute pants were different. They were.
I really regret wearing them to school.
Well, we had hammer pants.
Yeah.
You think hammer pants will come back? Like genie pants?
I regret.
You got room to put groceries in the crotch of those things?
You know that whole thing you say where you stand in the shower and you think back to middle school and you go, oh, yeah, that's what I do. When you say hammer pants, I'm like, ooh, because mine were purple. And I had like a purple, like.
Mine were purple.
It was like a Z Cavarici button up rayon.
See, what's
shirt.
Funny is we're 5 years apart. There's a chance that we have the same pair of hammer pants and I gave mine to Goodwill.
Oh.
And they made their. Wouldn't that be interesting?
I bought mine at the mall, I remember. With my own money, I think. I wasted money on
that's
that.
That's true. Would you get hammer pants at Goodwill? I don't think so.
I don't know. I had a skateboard season, too. See, that was
really?
Cool. Oh, yeah. Vision Streetwear, Tony Hawk board. Like,
okay.
That I could go back and be like, cool. You know, that's the grunge stuff still kind of sticks. Everybody's listening to Red Hot Chili Peppers.
Right.
You know, and.
Were you good at
Goodwill? You know that.
Were you good at skateboarding?
Yeah, I was all right. I wasn't like a...
Could you do a little ollie and a little...
I never ollied
kick
well.
Kick flips.
Now, back then, the skateboards were only the backside elevated.
Okay. Oh, it had a little rampy...
Yeah, the front was just flat.
Yeah.
So now both sides for people when I see them, I feel. But no, I mean, here's the thing. I could like... We were like... We would go skateboard down the road for a mile, you know, kind of thing, and go down the hill. And, you know, I could
then
do
you
got
to go back, though. That's not...
Yeah. No, I wasn't. I
was more of a motorized. I wanted to. I mean, I had a bike, but skateboarding just felt very unstable to me.
Yeah,
maybe it's my center of gravity was wonky.
We wore no helmets.
I got a big butt. I just don't feel like a skateboard. I was always like, even when I was like, I look back at photos of myself in like high school and junior high, and I thought I was so fat, and I was just like a normal kid. But I always had a big butt. Like I always had the butt where, like, even when I had like a 34-inch waist, the pockets would like flare. Like nice. Like the lizard you see the lizard running? I had those kind of pockets. Like, I'd wear pants that fit, the waist fit, but my butt just made the pockets go, pow!
Wow. That's,
I got a flare. I need a zip-up pocket that just kind of hugs and you
see. I basically me. My entire life, my legs basically just go straight into my back. Like,
okay,
I don't really
no butt.
Yeah,
we need like a to meet a happy middle.
It's
it would be a happy. It would be a happy. I'll loan you some.
Thank you.
We'll share glutes, like a glute sharing program.
I don't. That, you know, when I've lived this long.
You don't want to?
No.
You don't want to inject some of my butt fat into your butt?
No.
Are you sure?
I can tell you right now definitively,
John,
that...
It was my birthday. You said...
It was the weirdest...
You said whatever I wanted to do.
It's the weirdest question that I've ever been asked. I feel like I'm going to edit
this
whole episode.
I'm offering you a free gift.
I feel...
it's fine.
Number one, I don't know what our blood types are.
That's true.
That's weird.
Well, no, I'm not saying I'll do the surgery. What? Come on in. I got a shop vac. Like, I'm not going to just... I'm not going to...
Listen, at this point in my life...
You're ready to... Whatever your butt is, that's what your butt is. I'm exercising.
Running.
But you don't do, like, squats and stuff to try to get it...
No, but you know what? You just told me the whole thing I'm doing right now with running is, like, bad for my heart.
At least that's one article. That's one article. What's funny is that the article said that the... presupposition was that running was bad for women. Long distance running was bad for women, and they're showing that it actually is good for women. That it reduces their vascular age by like 8 years, and men can lose 10 years off their life. Like they said, they looked at men's heart valves and stuff, and they said they were way stiffer and more rigid than we thought.
Please, that's the one thing I want to do. Can I just have?
I think if you read this article, it's going to be like people who run 25 miles a week.
I'm running 12 to 15.
That's what I'm saying. I think you're under the. You don't
But
count.
You're making that up. Like you already said, you're corroborating what you want me to...
Yeah.
I am.
Well, think about... But here's the deal. What if you don't run at all? Now you gain 50 pounds. Now you're at a heart risk because...
Yeah,
see what I'm saying? Like, you got to just choose your...
Can I just get a pill? Like, seriously. We're there.
We are. We're getting those.
Give me the pill.
Okay.
I mean, I will still do some work, but...
You want to... What do you want the pill to do again?
I want it to keep me from having a heart attack.
Oh.
You know what I'm saying? Like... Right. I want to. Can I just say this for a second before we close? Because this is like a thing. Because I am like having my blood drawn, all the stuff with my family history, and there's a lot of. I've been on a statin since I was like 21. I just changed statins, and now they're looking at the particle sizes of your cholesterol.
Oh, really?
Familial cholesterol.
Familial cholesterol is a different thing. It's like,
totally.
I've seen that cholesterol
guy somewhere. HDL, I see. Anyway, it could be different and affect differently versus small particles versus big fluffy particles. And so I'm having all kinds of, there's all kinds of new, sort of studies about it. So I'm in the middle of that. And I think I said to my doctor the other day, I was like, here's what I can't understand. When my wife was pregnant with my daughter.
They were like, look, son, when a man and a woman love each other very much.
I was like. I saw her face.
Yeah.
I saw her 3D face.
Yeah.
Like a video.
Uh-huh.
She could look at me and smile and give a thumbs up.
Right.
And you're telling me you can't take any sort of imaging. You're going to wait to see if I start having symptoms.
Right, before you can do anything.
And I know I sound like a guy with a conspiracy, and I'm not. But you're going to wait till I start having symptoms and possibly have heart damage.
Yeah.
You're going to do an EKG to see if it sounds like it's working right.
Right.
But, like, could you not just, I don't know.
Take a picture of my heart.
3D image my heart like you can every other organ or a small human inside of people.
Yeah.
And, like, I don't know, look at the valves, look at the stuff, and tell me if it's working right or not. I could just lay here, and you could do it. But instead, we're going to wait until something seems off.
All right.
Then you're going to go through my femoral artery with a risky procedure, an arteriogram, go up into the vessel to, like...
Mm-mm.
Surely technology,
right?
Like, can you not just, I mean, I can go to the airport and they can do a bone scan, basically me going through there. They can see through my clothes. And like, come on, guys.
Right. Come to my house. I'll give you some butt fat.
Like, Johnny's giving away free butt fat.
I mean, meanwhile, they can't fix your heart. Get out of here.
I know. And I know I'm a medical Neanderthal. I understand maybe, but I just want to go, guys, especially men.
Yeah.
Every man at 45, we should start scanning their hearts every year from there forward.
Yeah.
And then if we see a problem, then you go in and stint it before it's a problem. Anyway.
When I'm president.
That's the first. It's going to be your whole platform.
Number one.
Yeah. Heart scans.
It's probably not going to happen.
I don't know. I mean, if you're a medical person out there.
Yeah.
I mean, hey, I will fund the study. How about that? with the Patreon money that comes in from Talk About That, which if someone wanted to donate to the Heart Study through Patreon, Johnny, how would they even do that?
TalkAboutThatPodcast.com. All of our stuff is linked. Our Patreon account is linked there. Go to our link trees. You can find out about John's books and his upcoming releases. Find out about my social media. Follow me there. Find clips and dates. If you want me to bring, if you want to bring me to your event,
yeah.
I do events all the time. Come do that. That'd be great. Yeah. If you just want to send us a note, you can send that there. So yeah, go to talkaboutthatpodcast.com.
Make sure you go to wherever you listen to podcasts and leave us a rating and a review. That's great. That helps.
That does. It helps the algorithm find us. The nameless, faceless, whatever.
Sentient.
Yeah. Being that controls how famous we get.
Yeah.
That's okay. Whatever.
It's what it is.
We put itself in its able hands.
Yeah.
Whatever it may be.
Whatever, yeah. You can also, if you'd like a free book, I gave away some more books this week. So email me, john@johndriver.com.
You're just a giver,
all
John.
All I ask for is an honest review on Amazon. And if you
That's
have
fair.
That book, you know, and some of you, I saw your reviews this week. Thank you. But if you've read it and haven't put that review...
Then you've not held up your end of the bargain.
Yeah, I need my
don't book. Listen. John's already said that he can go a little. Don't bring crazy John out.
You don't want me to.
You do. I promise you. You do not want to fight. Him.
Want to fight me? but yeah, I'm gonna get that book back. So
yeah, it's like the
yeah. I'm just time, I'm just kidding.
If you've not done your part, send the book back.
Yeah.
What to be totally fine? The spines I've been broken.
Right. They're like we read the introduction.
And they did not read this
your
book.
Your prologue was. I don't think there is a prologue.
An amateur log.
Hi-o, is he right? Hey, guys, of course he's right. And he'll be right again next week when we join you again on...
Talk About That.
Hey everybody, I'm Dale.
And I'm Tamara.
We're hosts of the Kynos Project podcast,
where we help you tackle ancient Christian truths in everyday settings.
To learn more and subscribe, go to lifeaudio.com.